Chapter 19. It was dark by the time we got to Shea Carpenter, and we were beginning to slow down to turn into the driveway when Murphy said, "Someone's tailing us." "Keep driving," I snapped at once from where I was crouched down in the back of Murphy's Saturn. I felt like a groundhog trying to hide in a golf divot. "Go past the house." Murphy picked up speed again, accelerating very slowly and carefully on the snowbound streets. I poked my head up just enough to peer into the night behind us. Mouse sat up with me and looked solemnly and carefully out the back window when I did. "The car with one headlight, pointing a little to the left?" I asked. "That's the one. Spotted him about 10 minutes ago. Can you see his plates?" I squinted. "Not through this snow, and with his lights in my eyes." Molly turned and knelt in the passenger seat, peering through the back window. "Who do you think it is?"
"Molly, sit down," Murphy snapped.
"We don't want them to know that we've seen—" The headlights of the car behind us grew brighter and began to sweep closer. "Murph, they saw her. Here they come."
"I'm sorry," Molly said. "I'm sorry."
"Get your seatbelts on," Murphy barked. Murphy began accelerating, but our pursuer closed the distance within a few seconds. The headlights grew brighter, and I could hear the roar of a big, old, throaty engine. I scrambled up to the back seat and clawed at the seatbelt, but Mouse was sitting on the other side of the buckle. And before I could get it out from under him, Murphy screamed,
"Hang on!"
Collisions are always louder than I expect, and this one was no exception. The pursuing car smashed into the rear of the Saturn at maybe 40 miles an hour. Metal screamed. Fiberglass shattered. I got slammed back against my seat and then whiplashed into the back of the driver's seat. Mouse bounced around too. Molly screamed. Murph swore and wrenched at the steering wheel. It could have been worse. Murphy had gained enough speed to mitigate the impact, but the Saturn went into a spin on the snowy streets and revolved in a graceful slow-motion ballet. Slamming my nose into the back of Murphy's seat didn't feel very good. In fact, it felt so not good that I lost track of what was going on for a few seconds. I was vaguely aware of the car spinning and then crunching broadside into an enormous mound of snow. The Saturn's engine coughed and died. My pounding heart sent thunder to my ears and agony to my nose. I barely heard the sound of a car door opening and closing somewhere nearby. I heard Murphy twist around in her chair and gasp, "Gun!" She drew her weapon, unfastened her seatbelt, and tried her door. It was pressed into a solid wall of white. She snarled and crawled across a stunned Molly's lap, fumbling at the door. I lurched to the other side of the car and clawed at the door until it opened. When it did, I saw a slightly smashed-up car in the middle of the street, idling, with both doors open. Two men stalked toward us through the snow. One was holding what looked like a shotgun, and his partner had an automatic in either hand. Murphy threw herself out of the car and darted to one side. It wasn't hard to figure out why. If she'd started shooting immediately, Molly would have been in the line of any return fire. Murphy moved swiftly, crouched as close to the ground as she could get, but to do so cost her a precious second. The shotgun roared and spat fire. The blast smashed Murphy to the ground like a blow from a sledgehammer. At the sight, my scrambled brain congealed. I drew up my will, flung out a hand, and screamed,
"Vinta servitas!"
Wind roared forth from my outstretched fingers. I directed it at the snow-covered ground in front of our attackers, and a sudden storm of flying bits of ice and snow engulfed the gunmen. I kept the pressure on them, maintaining the spell, as I shouted,
"Molly! Get to Murphy! Vail and first aid!"
Molly shook her head and gave me a glassy-eyed stare, but she climbed out of the car and staggered over to Murphy. A second later, both of them vanished from sight. I let up on the wind spell. Moving enough air to keep a gale-force wind going is a lot more work than anyone thinks. The air went still again, except for swirling eddies of wind and frost devils that danced about in half a dozen whirling helixes of snow. The two gunmen were revealed, crouching low, their arms still upraised to shield their eyes from the wind and stinging flakes of ice. I missed my staff. I missed my duster. But I wasn't missing the .44 revolver I drew from my coat's pocket and aimed at the bad guys while I raised my left hand, shaking the shield bracelet there out from under the sleeve of my coat.